This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Developing countries worry about their best and brightest fleeing. Rural and Rust Belt parts of the U.S. worry about this brain drain. Well, what about tough urban neighborhoods, which our next guest calls low-status areas? Majora Carter is an urban revitalization strategist and real estate developer and a MacArthur Genius Grant recipient who lives and works in Hunts Point in New York's South Bronx, where she grew up. What do people need and want there? Well, jobs, community centers, lower crime. But her organization has surveys that find it may take more to get people who can choose to leave to, in fact, stay. Carter's new book is called Reclaiming Your Community. Ms. Carter, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I mean, you've asked people, you've done surveys, and yes, people want safe streets. I assume they want strong schools, but that's not all they want.
Definitely not. They also want to feel as though there's something to look forward to in their community that just like speaks to them. And it has things like cafes and restaurants and parks and bookstores, you know, where they can meet other people and express themselves and just feel good about where they are.
Now, you mentioned the cafe. Among your many projects over the decades, making urban parks, working on real estate projects, is your coffee shop. You opened a coffee shop, Boogie Down Grind in the South Bronx. Some people love it, but others at least initially did not. And that leads us to a central tension that you chew on in your book. If you do something that could raise the status of a place, that could make it more economically diverse, but that could raise rents for people who live there.
Well, I'm not saying that talent retention is going to solve gentrification, but gentrification will not be fixed without talent retention because the underlying problem is the lack of wealth creation and retention in those same communities. Because when you think about it, gentrification, generally, it kind of involves outsiders coming in to change a community to suit its needs, whereas reclaiming involves retaining the talent that is already there to improve our surroundings and our own economic future. And poverty is not a cultural attribute. And there's so much money to be made by maintaining it, for example, in the form of concentrated government-subsidized affordable rental housing and community centers and health clinics and pharmacies. It's almost as if folks believe that that's all there can and should be in those communities. And if you really look at it also, billions of philanthropic and government dollars go into those neighborhoods, yet they remain economically stagnant with the same kind of quote-unquote economic developments that we see there all the time.
I mean, you really take this on. The book is critical of what you call the nonprofit industrial complex. What are these, like organizations that are there to do good, but you worry have the effect of keeping people down?
The way that I think about the nonprofit industrial complex, which is also, you know, supported by both philanthropy, but also government, the government industrial complex as well, it's that they assume that poverty is a cultural attribute and that it's almost something to be maintained. And there's an assumption that equality is never really going to happen in those communities. And thus, you sort of have to maintain the status quo of poverty because that's all that's ever really going to be there. And I challenge that because, again, with this talent retention community development strategy that we use, it's an open acknowledgement that there's always been talent in our community. The problem is that we don't really think about retaining it. And the nonprofit industrial complex that's been supported by government for all these years actually works to maintain that. So why are we basically essentially continuing to support the extraction of the talent in our own communities to benefit somebody else, especially, you know, in this era when we know that we need more economic diversity in our own communities to create even just like a push in the direction of wealth creation and wealth generation within our own communities?
Yeah, we talk about extractive approaches to resources, but the idea that brain drain is an extractive process. That's very interesting.
Yes, it is. You know, we help people feel that they need, if they're going to grow up and be somebody, that they need to measure success by how far they get away from our communities. And we're led to believe that. I mean, I happen to have been one of those kids that was taught that. And I think we can honestly say that we don't have to do this. We can reclaim our communities.
I mean, I see the power of using that term, reclaiming, as you just did. You used to, past tense, use a phrase self-gentrification, but I mean, you acknowledge it's kind of triggering. It's going to start some extra trouble.
Yeah, just the word gentrification is just too hot for anybody, so we just don't even use it. But self-gentrification, which is a term that I did not make it up. I learned it from the head of a HBCU down in Charlotte, North Carolina, called Johnson C. Smith University. His name was Dr. Ronald Carter. And the way that he used to describe it was that his university and the local community nearby was actually financed by some banking, you know, partners to do development locally. And so it was the people in that same community that were doing the development. But of course, not everybody was involved in the neighborhood, and there were some who were just like immediately, you know, got their hackles up and were just like, oh my goodness, we're being gentrified out of here. And he was like, no, that's not the case. Like, look who's doing the development. It's like, it's your neighbors and, you know, people in your own community. And so if anything, this is self-gentrification because you're building from the inside to support the people that are already there. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting, you know, kind of provocative. I didn't realize how provocative it was going to be, but it was fascinating. And so many people totally understood and immediately clicked in. They were like, yeah, we want nice things in our own community too. But yes, there were others who just couldn't get past the word gentrification, not wanting to explore any further.
There must have been a point in your life, I think you talk about it in the book here, that you were probably set on not living in the place where you're from, right?
Oh, I started planning my escape from the South Bronx when I was about 7 years old. My brother, you know, had been killed by some of the gang violence in the community. And I was just like, I'm out of here. And I was encouraged to do so, you know, by teachers, by my family. And so, yeah, I use education to get out. I got myself into the Bronx High School of Science and Wesleyan, and I wasn't trying to look back except for my mother's fried chicken, which was the best in the world. And I only came back home because I was broke and needed a cheap place to stay when I went to NYU. And that was my parents' house in my old bedroom.
You started to see, well, you could move or you could try to make it better.
Exactly. You know, what was interesting was that when I realized that I could either stay and use my talents, my education to support the community, I also realized that no one would have blamed me if I'd left. I mean, we've got a long history, you know, of brain drain in our communities, and I just would have been a part of that.
Majora Carter is an urban revitalization strategist and real estate developer and MacArthur Genius Grant recipient. Her new book is called Reclaiming Your Community. You don't have to move out of your neighborhood to live in a better one. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David.